Welcome to the Freedom Line, the podcast for the Center for Individual Freedom, where we meet nonsense with common sense. Here's your host, Renee Giacchino.
Thank you for tuning into the Freedom Cast. My name's Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. Joining me now again is my colleague, Tim Lee. Tim serves as Senior Vice President of Legal and Public Affairs. Tim also writes a weekly article for CFIF for our free online newspaper that folks can follow along with. You can sign up by going to cfif.org. He also is a frequent contributor to the Freedom Line blog. Tim, thanks again for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Great to chat with you, and Happy New Year.
Thank you. It's been a little while. Yes, indeed. Happy New Year. So let me start. There was an important judicial victory that just came out for the Second Amendment, something that you wrote about this week. And I think it's a very important decision. You know, certainly we've seen over the past couple of years, this current Supreme Court makeup willing to go back and look at some of these issues as they relate particularly to Second Amendment rights, critically important. I mean, that's why it's the Second Amendment, right behind free speech. But you just wrote another piece about a decision coming from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Tell us what's going on there.
Yeah, this is a really critical decision. So what's at issue in this case is a federal statute and then the regulations enforcing it from the ATF that essentially prohibited handgun sales from licensed dealers to adults under 21. So if you're 18, 19, or 20 years old, you were not able to purchase a handgun according to this law. Now, you're an adult, you can vote, you can go fight in war, you can serve in the military, but you can't purchase a handgun. So the question before the court was, is this constitutional to deprive an adult, law-abiding citizen of the right to keep and bear arms? Now, in 2012, the same Fifth Circuit had ruled that that was a permissible regulation by the federal government. I disagreed with that. Terrible decision, frankly. I mean, the natural right of self-defense, which is at the heart of the Second Amendment, applies to an 18-year-old and a 19-year-old and a 20-year-old just as much as it does to a 21-year-old. And so that was itself a terrible decision. But in the meantime, we had a great Supreme Court ruling a couple of years ago. Justice Clarence Thomas wrote the opinion. And what they said was, in throwing out a very restrictive New York gun law, what they said was that for a gun restriction, for something that infringes on the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms, the government must demonstrate that it is, quote, consistent with the nation's historical tradition of firearm regulation. So you can't just say that, hey, this is a good idea, or we think that this will cut crime. You have to show that through the nation's history, that sort of regulation was consistent with the historical tradition of firearm regulation. So taking a step back for a second, the Heller case in 2008 was obviously the biggest Supreme Court Second Amendment decision in history. For the first time, they confirmed what we all knew, applying logic and history, that the Second Amendment protects an individual right to keep and bear arms. So for people who don't pay attention to this issue as much, take a step back for a second. You'll recall under the Second Amendment, it refers to the state militia. And so people who want to restrict firearm possession tried to say, well, what that means is state governments have a right to possess firearms. Well, that makes no sense on its face because the Second Amendment refers to the right of, quote, the people to keep and bear arms. And so throughout the Constitution, the term the people is used multiple places. Every time it's used, it refers to individuals, not some sort of state government apparatus like a state militia or something like that. And in fact, in the 10th Amendment, the explicit text distinguishes between the rights of the people and the state. So the people refers to individuals. So after the Heller decision, given this background, just in terms of saying, look, I think even the left and the most restrictionist anti-Second Amendment people accept by now that it's an individual right to keep and bear arms. They've given up that fight. So what they try to do now is chip away at it slowly. They try to prohibit you from transporting it outside of your house. Well, that makes no sense, and that's what the New York case a couple of years ago centered on. What good does it do to have a right to keep and bear arms if you can't leave the house with it? Obviously, home protection is an important part of the Second Amendment, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to take one out with you, whether it's hunting or target shooting or self-protection. So what we were dealing with in this case, the Fifth Circuit just ruled upon last week, was a restriction saying, hey, adults between 18 and 21 can't purchase a handgun for self-protection. Well, that's ridiculous. And so what the Fifth Circuit did, applying Justice Clarence Thomas's ruling, or the Supreme Court's ruling, Justice Thomas wrote the great majority opinion, was seeing if this would fit within the history of firearms regulation in America. And get this, by the way, sort of a side note here, the Biden administration's attorneys actually claimed that the somebody who's 18 to 21 is not, quote, among the people protected by the right to keep and bear arms. So, you know, you can vote, you can serve in the military, but you're not protected as the people. So that made no sense whatsoever. Anyway, the Fifth Circuit really just dispatched with that argument pretty quickly. What they said is they looked at the Second Amendment. It obviously didn't have an age restriction, which created a presumption that somebody 18 to 21 does have a Second Amendment right. And what they did is they looked at other provisions of the Constitution that does set age limits. So, for instance, if you want to be president, you have to be 35. If you want to serve in the House of Representatives, you must be 25 years old. Obviously, the Second Amendment doesn't have that. So they said, look, the presumption is that it covers everybody who's a law-abiding citizen. And so then they proceeded to look at, well, how does this fit within the nation's history? And it just wasn't even a close question. The court looked and said, even in the 1792 Militia Act, it required militia members, which referred to all able-bodied males above 18 years old, to possess guns so that they could serve in that manner. And so they just went through the history and said, you cannot contend that restrictions on firearm possession for those aged 18 to 21 is part of our nation's history. So they threw out that law, and it's not going to be appealed to the Supreme Court because obviously the Trump administration agrees with the court, whereas the Biden administration was the one arguing this. So the simple point of all of this is to say the court did the right thing, and now we've got about, 17 years now of courts finally accepting the individual right to keep and bear arms under the Second Amendment and protecting it more and more. This is the latest example of it. It shows the importance of getting strict constructionists on the court, and the court's to be applauded for this, but it's great, great news for people who believe in individual freedoms and especially Second Amendment freedoms.
So what do you think will happen with this case? I mean, as is often happens and is the case, you know, it will be appealed. Do you anticipate that the language in this is strong enough? You know, do you anticipate an appeal? And if an appeal is filed or, you know, a writ for appeal, do you think it would be granted by the Supreme Court? I mean, is there any, you know, I know the Supreme Court, if there are, you know, different decisions, conflicting decisions, then that might give rise to the Supreme Court taking the case. Do you see anything out there that maybe would prompt that to happen?
I don't. And it actually raises an interesting point that Jonathan Turley, who appears often on Fox News, he's a law professor at George Washington University in Washington, D.C., actually brought up. And so kind of an important side note. To answer your question simply, I do not think it will be appealed, and the simple reason is that as this case was going up the system from the lower court up to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, the Biden administration was in charge. So their attorneys were the ones trying to defend the law. Now, after last week's ruling, obviously the Trump administration is now in charge, and they're inclined to protect Second Amendment rights, and so they're not going to appeal this. They're going to let this one go. And so that's the good news. The bad news is, and it's not necessarily bad news, but Jonathan Turley brought up an interesting point, and you bring up an interesting question by asking this. Jonathan Turley actually pointed out that it almost would have been better for the Trump administration to appeal it. The reason being that that could get it, get the Fifth Circuit's decision that just came out last week affirmed and make it the law of the land. So now it's obviously a Fifth Amendment, or excuse me, Fifth Circuit ruling, and that will be persuasive for other circuits, but not necessarily determinative. And so the First Circuit or the Ninth Circuit might come to a different decision They're unlikely to, but they might, in which case, you know, it might get up to the Supreme Court then. But as Jonathan Turley pointed out, it almost would be good for the Trump administration to appeal this, even though they actually agree with the decision itself. So you raise an interesting question, but I think the short answer is no, it won't be appealed. So this will be, it'll stand, and other courts will hopefully look to it and abide by it.
So back up a little bit, because at the very beginning of our discussion, I mean, you highlighted, you know, certain things they can, people can vote, people can, you know, become members of the military. And back up how this, just dive a little deeper for me to help us understand, how is it that, you know, this case before the Fifth Circuit ruled as it did last week, you know, how is it that they could preclude someone under 21 from purchasing a handgun, but put it in their hands if they're a member of the military?
Yeah, it makes no sense whatsoever. And somebody who's 18, you could almost argue, has even more need for something like that. An 18-year-old might be working the night shift, you know, just out of high school, and needs a firearm for protection in a way that maybe by the time you're in your 20s, you've been promoted enough that you're no longer working the graveyard shift. So that's obviously one hypothetical for it. So, you know, there really isn't a good defense for prohibiting somebody over 18 from owning or purchasing a handgun. Previous courts were just a little bit too deferential to local, state, and even federal governments. This was a federal statute. Courts were too deferential. They said, well, it's sort of the government's job to determine whether this will improve safety in the nation, and we're going to defer to them on that. That was wrong for them to do, but the good news was that with the decision a couple years ago written by Justice Thomas, they can no longer do that. They had a much higher standard to prove that this is within the nation's history and tradition. So the short answer to your question is there really was no solid logic for prohibiting somebody under 21 from possessing or purchasing a handgun. But courts did it anyway because they were far too deferential to them. So it actually brings up an interesting point that the court addressed. Because what the Biden administration did and their attorneys did as they were appealing this and trying to make their argument to the Fifth Circuit was to say, look, there are other age restrictions under 21, things like alcohol purchases and things of that sort. And the court made quick work of that, saying that the difference between purchasing alcohol and possessing a firearm. Possessing a firearm is an individual right explicitly guaranteed by the Second Amendment. Purchasing alcohol is not. And so, you know, people a lot of times will say, well, why do we require people to have driver's licenses but not a license to own a gun? Well, there's a simple reason for that, because the right to self-defense and therefore the right to keep and bear arms is a natural human right, which the Bill of Rights protects. The right to drive, as important as it is not protected in the Bill of Rights. And so, therefore, the government has a much higher standard to infringe upon the right to keep and bear arms than it does to infringe upon the right to drive without a license. And so, simple distinction. I can't believe that people in public make that argument a lot, but it's an easy one to dispatch.
So our guest has been Tim Lee, Senior Vice President of Legal and Public Affairs at the Center for Individual Freedom. To follow Tim and his work, and that of the Center for Individual Freedom, this organization, follow us by signing up for the Liberty Update, going to CFIF.org. That's where we'll send you CFIF's latest news, commentary, and alerts delivered right to your inbox. Tim, before I let you go, two quick questions, a sneak peek into what may be on your nightstand. What are you reading these days? And then what other big issues are you following right now?
I wish I could brag that my reading was better than it is. I am terrible about fiction. I read so many newspapers throughout the day and opinion columns that my time for fiction is bad. So what I'll do is I'll go ahead and tip my hat to my favorite book of all time, and that's Jack Kerouac's The Dharma Bums. It's not on my nightstand, but if there was a book on my nightstand, it would be The Dharma Bums by Jack Kerouac. And so that would be it. But, unfortunately, I'm so boring and dry that most of what I read is things like court opinions, like I just discussed. And so that would answer that question. What was the second part of your question?
The second question was, what other big issues are you following right now?
Oh, gosh. You know, this is so enjoyable for me right now, for somebody who is against just this encroaching administrative state and what people would refer to as the deep state. Seeing Doge and Elon Musk and what they're doing to root out waste in the government and to root out groups that frankly are working contrary to American interests and contrary to the president, who is, after all, the head of the executive branch, rooting that out and finally starting to cut down and bring efficiency to the federal administrative state is just wonderful. Also on telecom, Brendan Carr is now the FCC chairman, and he's doing great work over there. You know, we worked for years on things like so-called net neutrality and bringing more market, free market propositions to the internet service provider market, and that's finally happening too. So to see these things happening after working on them for years is really important. With the Trump administration back in office too, we're going to see much greater protection for intellectual property, which is really important for pharmaceuticals. For pharmaceutical innovators to create things, they have to invest billions of dollars to do that. And if you don't protect their intellectual property once they come up with a patent, they have no incentive to create these life-saving drugs. And so to have the Trump administration back and not doing the things like the Biden administration did, which was propose surrendering our patents to the world, you know, so that other countries could just mooch off of our innovation, that's really wonderful too. So it's great to see this happening after you and I and all of us at CFIF have worked on this for so many years. To see it coming to fruition like this is just wonderful.
Well, thank you again for all your hard work. And as always, thank you for joining us today on the Freedom Cast. It's always a pleasure to have you on the program, and we will have you back real soon.
Thanks a lot.